Oh, we don't recognize that music anymore. Can you call it music? Not if I'm playing it, but actually, I'm not sure if I told you this. Oh, hello, Alex. Thank you for rejoining us. And if anybody's out there listening, well, you're in for a treat, I'd like to say. But, well, you see, I'm a bit ring rusty. And it feels like everything's echoing around, which you didn't do before, but it's probably just my imagination. But, somebody we both know and love who's a Celtic fan said to me, you know that music you play at the start of the show? And I said, yes, obviously. And he said, it's quite offensive to Celtic fans. I said, really? And I wasn't aware of that. He said, yeah, because it's a Rangers song. I said, listen, it's not exclusively a Rangers song. I wasn't having it. And he went, yes, it is. Well, maybe not exclusively, he said, but Rangers have got that song, We All Follow the Rangers. I said, well, I'm not sure they had it first. And then he said, there's some, I don't know, he went on and on about all the sort of religious ramifications of it, and I kind of got lost with that conversation. I just went, well, apologies if I've offended anybody. He said, probably he hasn't offended anyone, but you ought to change that theme music. And but it didn't stop him listening. Yeah. So if he's listening now, big shout out. And yeah,
he's just upset that Rangers have won the league.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, that would upset. Yeah, God, of course I forgot about that as well, because my family actually, I think, divided loyalties in a way, because my grandfather was Rangers and my grandmother was Celtic. So yeah, I can't take sides on this one. But anyway, good to have you back, Alex. And we got to talk about Spurs, of course. Who didn't turn up?
Yeah,
well, we got to make the most of it. You know, not allowed to use the word DVD anymore for obvious reasons. But no doubt, if they'd have won that game, there would have been a DVD coming out of it. You know, because that's all they do, right? When they win a game against Arsenal, it's a big cause for celebration. I've got to say, I enjoyed this victory more than usual. I was getting a lot of jip at the time. My daughter was sending me messages during the game saying, Dad, how would you feel if I told you that I'm considering becoming a Spurs fan? And I just wrote back, no. Just a very brief response, no. And I was just so incensed. And then when Spurs took the lead, I didn't really see any way back, even though Arsenal totally dominated. Was that how you felt during the game?
Yeah, I was. It was completely against the run of play.
Yeah.
If you see the video on Twitter, these two, like the equivalent of Spurs Arsenal fan TV, these two Spurs fans.
Giving it large.
Obviously, it shows them commentating throughout the game, and then obviously the obvious sort of tears at the end when we win. But it was, even they say it's completely against the run of play.
Yeah,
and you know, we got what we deserved there. We were definitely a little bit unlucky. We weren't particularly efficient.
Yeah.
But you know, it was well deserved, wasn't it? And I think it's what the club needed. And you know, it's like our record against the top six. It's massively improved certainly compared to Emery, and certainly compared to Wenger in the last few years. So it's pleasing to see. We haven't spoken in a couple of months. It's been quite I'm trying to remember the last game. It's been, you know, a positive, overall positive few months, really, I feel.
Yeah, I think we spoke in February, but maybe I just made that one up.
At the very beginning, I think.
Yeah, it does seem like a very long time, but, you know, we do have other things aside Arsenal to deal with, that's for sure. But, I've been watching all the games. It's not that. But you know, it's just a case of how do we sort of find the time. But somehow we managed to do it today. So everybody out there who's listening, which is a grand total of not many at the moment. I don't even want to say the number right now. But no doubt they will tune in. Because, I've got to tell you, it's another thank Jeff Barnett's Sunday show. Because that was one that got people involved last time. So hopefully again. And obviously in memory of the great Jeff Barnett. He was actually a favourite goalkeeper of mine as a reserve keeper back in the 70s. But, yeah, so – and what about – yeah, the thing about the Spurs game, I was very, very tense because Auba wasn't playing. How did you feel about that?
Well, obviously, initially, nobody really knew why he wasn't playing. And it's obviously a discipline issue. And you have to commend. It was risky what Arteta did, because obviously if it had blown up in his face against Spurs of all people, you know, but it was the right thing to do.
Yeah,
it was the right thing to do. Players respect, just because he's the best player or was the best player, he still should follow the rules. And yeah, you know, no player wants to be in a team where people get exceptions or people get sort of special sort of exceptions. So I think it was the right thing to do. I'm glad he did. Obviously, I'm disappointed at Uber for it. And, you know, I think Uber hasn't had the best of seasons this year.
No, not at
all. So I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw, you know, maybe he leaves at the end of the year or maybe he has one more year. Because I know we've signed him to a new contract, but I personally think maybe just so we can maybe get some money for him. But, yeah, like... it's disappointing, but he's not. You know, I don't think he's particularly captain material. I think Arteta could have used it as an opportunity, maybe next year, to give the captaincy to someone else. For me, Tierney is the born leader in that team.
Popular choice.
And I don't know if you see the player cam that Arsenal put on him.
No, I didn't see that. No.
So they do this. Arsenal do this thing every so often.
Yeah.
I don't think it's every game. Where they just have a camera on a player for the whole game, and they just watch him. And you know, you see Tierney's reaction, like when Spurs scored, and you know, just how he plays throughout the game. It's fantastic. So, I was disappointed. It was risky what Arteta did, but I think it was the right thing to do. And yeah, Aubameyang has only himself to blame, really.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, at the time, it was all shrouded in mystery, though, because I thought, what kind of discipline? I guessed he's probably been late. That's what it is. And yeah, it is pretty serious.
Yeah,
it is pretty
exactly
serious.
What it was, yeah.
I don't. My dad, when he was playing pro, he was late for a game and he got disciplined. Well, he was so late. He was off the team sheet because he was. It was funny enough. I think it might have been against Spurs. I'm not sure. Not 100% sure. It was a massive game. It was a massive game, and he basically got stuck in traffic. So they, you know, after that, I think it was curtains on his career in that particular club. That was top flight as well. It was Northampton, believe it or not. That was their one and only season in the top flight. My dad missed a game because of you know, he got caught in traffic, or maybe he just started off late and he insisted on not living in the area. So, you know, in a way, he had himself to blame. And so, yeah, I thought the same about Auba. I thought if Auba can't make it on time, it sends out all the wrong messages to the other players. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of Auba. Huge fan.
Yeah.
And
especially to the young players as well.
Yeah, because then they think, why should I turn up on time? And then it's like a domino effect, and then no one turns up on time. And then you've got all kinds of problems to deal with. So I know Auba didn't mean it. Well, I don't know him that well to say. In fact, I've never met him. But I just sense that he's the sort of guy that he's just a laid-back kind of guy, and laid-back guys often make that sort of decision, don't they? They just go, well, I think I can make it just about in time, and then something happens along the way, and then you don't make it in time, you're actually late. And he probably thought, well, so be it, that's the way it is. And then maybe he was stressing out, but he was stuck in traffic, he couldn't make it. Because somebody took a picture of his car, didn't they? Did you see that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Yeah, so no one was really 100% sure it was him, but, well, 99% sure. And because everyone was thinking, you know, what was the reason? But the other thing is, what about the way Arteta dealt with it from a PR perspective? What were your thoughts on that? Because I was sort of in two minds. I thought he was okay with the cameras because he didn't, you know, the TV crews, he didn't tell them exactly why. He just said, look, it's an internal matter and it'll be dealt with.
Yeah.
But the thing is, did he have to go that far? Well, I mean, I think Wenger would have said, oh, he has an Achilles tendon problem, or make up some nonsense. I mean, I don't know if Wenger used to lie, but I always suspected, you know, like with Ozil and his backaches, whenever there was a Northwest trip, whenever it was like Blackburn, Bolton, any of those sort of trips, then Ozil would have a back injury. Burnley, definitely Burnley. Yeah. He's never going to make a Burnley trip. Stoke, no chance. You know, all those sort of trips, he would have a backache. And then Wenger would have to trot that excuse out. But I just felt, Arteta, this feels like a breath of fresh air for me, because there's a very honest guy standing up in front of the cameras and more not telling the full story, but telling some of the story. But there was part of me also thought, but does he need to tell him this? Because some people would say that it's embarrassing for Auber to be told, you know, to hear that in the, you know, when he goes home, everybody was chatting about it nonstop. Was there any other way you could have handled that?
Yeah, you have to be responsible for your actions, don't you? Like,
yeah.
You know, he's a grown man. So he has to be held accountable for his behaviour, really, doesn't he? I don't know if you should worry about his sensibilities too much.
Yeah.
Because ultimately he is a professional. You know, he knows what's expected of him. And he let the club down, you know. And, you know, Arteta would have obviously wanted to play him.
Oh, for
sure. There's no doubt. Yeah, that Arteta would have wanted to start him. But, you know, Aubameyang forced his hand. So, you know, and you've got to be strict, haven't you, really? You've got to, like, set the standard, and you can't let people take the piss. And, you know, whether he meant to or not, he was taking the piss, you know. Just like your dad, you know.
Yeah, he was, really, yeah.
Yeah, shit happens. You know what I mean? Like, you've made a commitment. You know, you're part of this team. We need you. And if you can't be bothered to get there on time, or you can't be bothered to get yourself organised, then that's your problem, isn't it? You know, I'm annoyed with him for it. And I think, you know, you expect better from your players, really. And I think what's his name? Arteta's got every right to be disappointed with him. And I think, you know, I don't really think Aubameyang deserves too much sympathy with it. I think he let the team down. And then, you know, if you saw him on Thursday, he had a bit of a stink of a performance then as well. So it's kind of like, hopefully the issue won't keep going and going.
Yeah. It's just this, the reason I sort of partly wasn't sure whether it was a good move or not was because, you know how they say, don't criticise someone in public. Criticize them in private. And Arteta, I think you've said this before. You said sometimes Arteta criticizes players in public, and that's not really good for them, you know, for their morale. It's not good for the team bonding, and it's certainly not good for the relationship between that player and the manager. So you should, if you want to have a go at a player, talk to him in private. Really, I've sort of heard that remark said quite a few times. Praise in public, criticise or censure in private. So did that sort of cross your mind at all? And I mean, it wasn't like a massive criticism, was it? It wasn't full on.
I don't know. What did Arteta exactly say? Like
he just said it's a disciplinary issue. I don't want to discuss it. It's being dealt with. And he didn't talk a lot about it. He just said it's a I said, what sort of disciplinary issue? He said, I'll just leave it on what I told you before. It's a disciplinary issue, and that's that. And he couldn't. Yeah. They weren't able. The press weren't able to get any more out of Arteta than that. He said, look, it's fine. Everything's fine. It's being dealt with. It's not a problem. We move on. He said, I think he said that we move on. But I mean, don't quote me on it. But it was something like that. It sounded sort of semi-positive. It sounded like he'd drawn a line in the sand. And that's that. It's been dealt with. End of story. So I quite liked the way he dealt with it, even though it went against some of the ideas that I've been fed over the years, you know, that, I mean, it's not always easy, is it, to, when you're upset about, he didn't seem upset at all. That's what was good about Arteta, because he's got a poker face. And so he can just stand there and, well, he doesn't lie either. I actually trust him a lot. I trust him so much more than Wenger.
I imagine he was really upset. I imagine.
Yeah.
You know, your star strike. Yeah. Because he's forced his hand.
Yeah, really. Like, I'd be choked. I'd be absolutely choked.
You know,
I mean, if it were me, I know I've said all that stuff about don't criticize players in public and so on. I couldn't imagine being a manager and having a guy, star striker, turns up late. I'd be spitting feathers, seriously. Yeah. And I would just say, I would gone a stage further than Arteta, which is probably why, you know, I'd never be a top manager. But I would have said, listen, he was late, and that's the end of it. And yeah, of course I'm going to forgive him for it. But right now I'm not in the mood to talk about it. Even I'm upset. Yeah. I would just come straight out with it. And the player may get upset, but I would just say, well, that's the way it is. You did something. I've reacted to it. Let's shake hands on it and move on if that's what you want to do. You know, I would, because I just can't. I think I struggle to hide my feelings, whereas Arteta, clearly, he can hide his. But he's still very honest with it, you know. So he's got a lot going for him, Arteta. I've just got so much respect for that guy. He's so mature. For a guy, he's what? Is he 30 something? I didn't check his age. Yeah. He just seems so much. I mean, he looks young, but he just acts and holds himself like somebody who's got a lot more years of experience as a manager. To me, people talk about him like he's a rookie, and I suppose he is technically, but to me, he's not. The way he conducts himself is far from being a rookie. So,
child,
does
he?
No, not at all. And yeah, so moving on from Auburn, what about Smith Rowe? I was absolutely couldn't believe how good he was against Spurs. Well, he's done that a few times, though.
Yeah, I could believe it. Mm. It's just so pleasing, isn't it, to see obviously a youth player, and he's kind of played a little bit out of position since Odegaard's come in. He hasn't really sort of let that affect him. Like I was concerned with Odegaard coming in, and you know, I thought it might hamper Smith Rowe, but he sort of worked around it. He's playing fantastic football, isn't he? Like he really does look like the real deal. And it's just a case of now of just keeping him away from injuries, really.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully he doesn't get injured.
That's all that worries me.
Keep on playing him. You know, keep his development going, and you know he's very promising for him, isn't it? It's a joy to watch.
Yeah, because, you know, when he receives the ball, I think somebody else commented on that. He doesn't seem to... He just receives the ball and keeps moving almost seamlessly. It's not like a movement to take the ball, and he'll just do it all in one. And he's just got that fluid movement about him. And then I think... Do you remember I said to you, he's a bit like Paul Merson. I feel the way he plays reminds me of Merson. And Tony Adams said the same thing just after. When I was watching one of the games, Adams was saying, he reminds me of Paul Merson a little bit. I thought, well, are you listening to the show? Or, I don't think so. But, but, you know, wishful thinking. But, so he had a pretty amazing game. Xhaka, who's, you know, neither of us are his biggest fans, but he's been not quite a revelation, but not far off.
He has. Xhaka has been something else since Christmas, since that brain dead moment.
Yeah.
I know he had a bit of a hiccup against Burnley, and I think that was as angry as I was about that Burnley mistake, because that was a game where they weren't in it at all.
I was going mad about that.
How fucking bad they were, and how we didn't put that game away. That was what the frustrating thing for me was. But I couldn't really blame Xhaka too much, because it's the way we play. It's not as bad or criminal as, say, the Ceballos mistake.
Oh, yeah, some people say that.
If you think about the Ceballos mistakes, and he's had two, hasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
That led to goals.
They're both in Europe, right? When they're both in Europe, yeah.
But they're more sloppy,
careless
mistakes, whereas Xhaka's was like, it was almost a case of, you know, he was put, Leno didn't give him a great pass, and he made the wrong decision in the pass that he made, which led to the goal. But it was a different sort of mistake, really. So, he's played every game. You know, he's smashing it, really, isn't he? And he seems to have changed how he plays. And I think Arteta's put a lot of faith in him, and he's repaying it, to be fair. And, you know, don't get me wrong, if I wouldn't want him in my starting 11, but at the minute, he's our second best midfielder. You know, I don't think Elneny cuts it. And I don't think Ceballos will stay another year.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Yeah, so that's something that we're going to have to sort of invest in the summer, isn't it? Midfielders.
Yeah, definitely. With Xhaka, yeah.
Well, I suspect it'll be quite a busy transfer window.
People say that.
Yeah, I think we'll get rid of a few more players. I think we've got a couple of the players on loan. They might go. You know, I think Ceballos will go. What are we going to do with Guendouzi? What are we going to do with Torreira? Mm. You know, there are all question marks about. So,
yeah.
You know, clearly, Arteta doesn't rate. You know, Guendouzi, not surprisingly, you know, his attitude has let him down.
Yeah, once again. Yeah, I'm so disappointed to hear that. But it's true. Yeah, that's what I've been reading.
Back as well.
Oh, so he's not going to be leaving permanently then, Kolasinac?
No, he's just on a half a season loan. And the Schalke chairman or manager made a comment the other week. He's like, what have Arsenal done to us? We were bad before. We're even worse now with these two fucking players. he's like, Arsenal have sold us two absolute duds. Hmm. And we were like, yeah, we know. We were surprised that you wanted them. And it's just like their attitude and everything. Thankfully, Mustafi is gone permanently.
Yeah.
The Kolasinac will be coming back. So we've still got a fair few players to get rid of. Still got some more dross to get rid of. But, you know, it's who we get in as well. You know, we'll have to sell some of these players to free up some money to pay for new players, really, because obviously we don't have the money.
The thing with Guendouzi, though.
That's a conversation for another day,
I think. Yeah, I think so. Because we're in the thick of a season. I mean, I was trying to work out when we last spoke how many games have gone by. I don't think we spoke after the Leicester game, so that was the end of February. And I was in a pretty buoyant mood after that, I remember. But I was also a bit knackered. And then Burnley, I was absolutely furious, wanting to talk, but just wanting to break things as well. I was in such a terrible state after that game.
Two completely conflicting results, eh?
Yeah.
Go to Leicester.
That was one of the best performances I've ever seen from an Arsenal team. I was so blown away. It was just unbelievably good, that game. And the other games before that, I remember the Leeds game better than some. Usually I remember defeats well. I don't remember the Man U defeat. It's Man City, wasn't it? It wasn't Man U. I don't remember that. I just felt depressed throughout the whole entire game. I remember that because I just felt Arsenal just not going to get anything out of this. And they let in an early goal, didn't they, in that City game?
Yeah.
So that was, you know, it's been a lot of ups and downs, actually, since we last spoke, but mostly ups, luckily. But, yeah, going back to midfielders. I was going to say, something occurred to me. I don't know if it was today or yesterday, but I haven't spoken to anyone about it or seen anyone write about it. But do you remember that incident at the start of, when was it? Not this season. I think it was the season before when Emery got sacked and all the players, well, not all the players, but a bunch of players were smoking some strange substance like laughing gas or something.
Oh, they're just doing laughing gas.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, yeah.
But do you remember?
Just balloons. They were just doing balloons.
But do you remember who the players were? They're all players that have gone, pretty much. Did you realise that?
No, Lacazette was one of them.
Yeah, yeah. But Guendouzi was one. Ozil was one. I think Kolasinac was there, if I'm not mistaken. So that's three.
Yeah, I think he was,
I don't know about Mustafi. I don't think he was there, but he could have been. I can't remember. But no, I reckon quite a few have gone, interestingly. And I wondered...
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I really love Lacazette and everything. And Guendouzi, I love him too. But it just sounds like his attitude, something wrong. But interestingly, those players that were there, sounds like a lot of them had questionable attitudes. How many were there? Was it about six? I'll have to look it up. How many were there?
Yeah, about 5 or 6.
Yeah. But it's quite a large number gone in quite a short space of time. It just suddenly crossed my mind. So... But, yeah, going back to midfielders and that, the goal against Burnley, I know I shouldn't focus on the negatives, but what were your exact feelings after Xhaka did that? Did you blame Leno or Xhaka or a combination of both?
I blame Xhaka. Yeah. It is fundamentally his fault because he was the one that played the ball.
But
you can say, and I think it's a fair point to say, well, the system that we play will sort of, that will happen.
Yeah.
You know, we want to play out from the back. We don't want to fucking root one it. So that will happen on occasion. So it's not like a complete shock that it did happen, because we all knew it could happen because of the way that, you know, the system that we play permits that sort of thing to happen. So, but oh yeah, of course I was angry. I think I was more frustrated at the fact that, you know, Burnley were absolutely awful.
Yeah, they were.
And they had no attack on goal, nothing. And it kind of gave them a way back into the game. In the second half, they looked a bit more, had a bit more about them, and, you know, and then, you know, in that game as well, obviously the penalties, I think the first one that wasn't given, I kind of was like, all right, fine. But the second one, like, when it was ball to hand, it was kind of like, what more do we need to do to get a penalty? You know, it really did get, I really did have that feeling. I thought, yeah, it's the start of the day. But it just exposed VAR, VAR,
yeah,
for the crock of shit that it is. Like, it's just, yeah, it's not there to improve the game. You know, it is, but it doesn't.
No,
you know, it's... it doesn't. Well, it doesn't do, and the refs. And this is something I've spoken. I don't think I've spoken to you about particularly, but this is something I know. The refs are very sort of. They always jump on the defensive. They always back each other, and they're very sort of insecure. It's a huge amounts of insecurity when they get a mistake, and so with something like VAR, the whole purpose of VAR is to not to make the right decision, but to see if the ref has made the wrong decision.
So,
the ref made a glaring error, you know, based on his perspective? What sort of fucking mindset is that? It should be, it shouldn't be about the ref. You know, I remember we used to watch refs back in the day, and like Graham Pohl, Mike Dean's like this now, and they used to make it all about them. You know, the referee, we shouldn't know the ref name. We shouldn't know the referee's name. They make it all about them. They want to be getting on the limelight. They want a bit of notoriety. And so with VAR, I think it's structured wrong. It's not about have the refs make a decision, the wrong decision, except that the refs do make the decision. It's hard reffing. I've the odd kids football match, and I make mistakes then. It's like, it's weird. When you're playing a game, you know all the rules. But when you're reffing a game, it's like it goes out of your memory. Like, it's really a weird sort of thing. And you have to make decisions. You know, I've never had that sort of, and I think it's an experience thing. But, you know, despite playing it, I know the rules of the game, obviously. But it's like you have to be paying attention, and you know, it's a very weird sort of thing. So, the refs do make mistakes, but with VAR, they've got it all wrong. You know, it's not about have the refs made a big enough error for us to overturn it. It should be, what is the correct? And so, you know, I was more disappointed. I was actually more disappointed by VAR than I was by Zaka's mistake, 100%.
Wow.
So
yeah, that's
because it's not helping. And I was a big supporter of technology.
Yeah, same here.
I really wanted VAR in, and you see, and it's frustrating because you just think, what fucking idiots are running this? Because you see how it works in rugby, you see how it works in cricket, and yeah, even now they still make mistakes in rugby and cricket. Now, there's still contentious decisions. But what there isn't contentious decisions every fucking game. Yes. There isn't arguments every game about how VAR have messed it up yet again. You know, nobody in rugby says, oh, our VAR or whatever they call it is ruining the game. But we have that conversation all the time with our VAR. And it's, so that's what they need to sort out. And it's frustrating to see them have the technology, have the time to sort it out, and, you know, have the time to implement a set of rules and decisions and whatever, and do it so badly.
It's been shocking.
I can't
defend VAR.
And you see, like, with the offside, when they're drawing fucking lines, he's like, oh, his toenail's offside. So, you know, and bollocks like that. And it's just like, it's almost like you're trying to justify your salary, really. You know, like, well, if I spend enough time doing something, I'm earning my minutes here. And, yeah, I just think it should be a case of, right, is he offside? One look, two looks, I can't tell. Original decision stands. or give it in the favour of the attacker.
That's what it was all supposed to be about, the offside rule. When they it was supposed to be, if you're level with the final defender, then you're onside. So I think any part of your body, if it's level with the defender, even if you're, you know, like when you're running a race and you put your, lean your head forward, if your head and your neck are forward, personally, I don't think you're offside. To me, that should be the rule, but obviously it isn't. A hand can be offside now. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, but you can't strike the ball with your hand.
Yeah, because I think Wenger said that
as well, didn't they? Oh.
Yeah, Wenger said this ridiculous, even, well, he likes a good moan, just like a pair of us, but Wenger said, well, I didn't hear him say it, but I read that he said it's crazy that parts of the body that you can't score with can be ruled offside. And I agree with that. But I personally think if you're level, the defender, I mean, it's all about, I'm not a big believer in playing offside anyway, so it wouldn't have affected any team that I've ever coached. I would just say, just don't play offside. Just do it when you have to. But just, you know, bear in mind, referees are human. They're likely to make a poor decision. So don't base your defending on getting a decision going your way, because it's risky. It's high risk. It's a high risk. I mean, I know with Adams and Bold, they were, no one was better at it than them, right? Adams and Bold and that back four that George Graham put together.
You can set a line. You can be organised. Yeah. If you play a high line, then you have to play it.
Yeah, of course. To a point. But then I'd always want to be goal side personally. And not that I'm a defender, obviously, you know, but I'd always want to be goal side because you play a little game, don't you? You push up and then you drop back a bit, push up, drop back a bit. I mean, in my sort of few matches or a couple of seasons worth of playing in defence, that's what I would do. But I would just always think, if I'm goal side, you know, and they knock a long ball, I'll probably get it first. So, but if it's knocked in the air, that's going to be a problem. But I wouldn't really be consciously trying to play the other team offside, because the thing is, even if you do it well, it depends on the level you're playing at, obviously. But if you're the top pro level, you should get the referees should make the right decision. But we watch these games and they don't even make the right decision, and they're getting paid shed loads and they're still making the wrong decision, even with the technology. So of course, just like you, I'm throwing my hands in the air and I've gone past the screaming stage. I don't know where I'm at now on a psychological profile because of VAR. I mean, I could check in at any time, you know, and just say, you know, the Premier League owe me compensation because I shouldn't be in this state. And it's only because of VAR, amongst other things, that's made me like this. Because, it's so frustrating. It's taking so much joy out of the game, because when Arsenal score now, I don't even cheer normally, because I go, it could be VAR'd out.
Yeah.
Could quite easily.
Yeah, because they get sort of stopped.
Yeah, could. There's every chance. So I just go, I'll wait. Yeah. And then by the time I've waited, I'll go, okay, is it a goal? Still not really sure. They've kicked off. Probably going to be a goal. There's not going to be a steward's inquiry on this one, you know? And I'm like, it shouldn't be like that. It should be joy at that moment. And then if it gets ruled out after, it's a rare thing, but now it seems to be commonplace. And you get a penalty, and then they decide it's not a penalty. And then when you should get a penalty and it needs investigation, I think it was Burnley, wasn't it? That was so ridiculous. So I was so upset about that. But going back to Burnley, when Xhaka, I mean, I've been saying how great he's been playing, because he's not great, but very, very good. High level.
I think he's been fantastic. He certainly played a part of his ability.
Yeah, I finally was seeing it on a regular basis. But that pass, honest to God, I don't think I've ever seen it at any level in any match a player do what he did then. It was just beyond the pale. Yeah. You know, it was different level. And I'm not saying he should get dropped because of it, because clearly he's playing well enough to keep his place. But I just couldn't get it out of my mind. It was the stuff of nightmares for me. I don't know if I had sleepless nights because of it, but I seem to recall around that time I barely slept. Maybe it was other reasons. Who knows? But that cross... Have you ever seen a guy do a crossfield ball in more or less the 6-yard box? I've never, ever seen
it. It's what you tell kids not to do.
Yeah, yeah. In the 6-yard box, though. I mean, you're bad enough in the penalty area.
Yeah.
Well, it was slightly outside, give him his due. But did you see the, what was it, Chris Wood scored, wasn't it? I think it was. Anyway, some big lump from Burnley scored. And so, yeah, he scored. Did you notice he didn't even celebrate? He just sort of shrugged his shoulders.
Well, he's embarrassed.
Yeah, he didn't even celebrate. I couldn't get over it. It was just the strangest goal I've ever seen in my life, I think, bar none. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. And so, yeah, I know, I think Keown blamed Leno. I couldn't blame Leno. I knew, yeah, it wasn't, he was marked, so it wasn't the best of passes. But the way Arsenal play with these high stakes.
I think Xhaka did the wrong thing.
Yeah,
you know, he probably got in the back of his mind, oh, I have to pass the ball, you know, I can't long it out. So he's doing what's been expected of him, really, you know.
Mm. It was a bit, in terms of the moment, it reminded me a bit of Runarsson. You remember Runarsson? Did you see that one where they gave him the ball and it was in the 6-yard box and he just booted it out for a corner? And I thought, well, seeing as he's a bag of nerves, he's actually done the right thing there. Even though I was cursing him at the time.
But he
was such a bag of nerves. And I thought, and he knows he's a bag of nerves and they've put him in this situation. He can't deal with it. And he, you know, so basically kicked it out for a corner, which created more pressure, but then again, it's not as bad as conceding the goal, is it? So I'm a guy of Xhaka's experience, but yeah, it's easier said than done when the stakes are high like that. But also, didn't he hit it with his right foot? And again, people said, yeah, but he was on his wrong foot and blah, blah, blah. And I can't accept that as an excuse.
I have to admit, I don't like that as an excuse. I know Xhaka is quite left-footed. I think that's a fair statement to make. That being said, you know, that doesn't really sort of wash for me.
It doesn't wash for me either. I mean, when you think how many hours they spend on the training ground and to me, you've got to be a little bit two-footed, at least if you're a pro.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say that's a minimum requirement, to be honest. If you not to have one leg that you can only use it for standing. That's insane, you know.
Yeah. So, Nigel Winterberg.
So I just couldn't make excuses for him. But at the same time, I've saved it till now to have a moan about that moment because I thought I've been praising him and now look what he does. You know, I was absolutely furious.
Yeah.
I couldn't get over it for the whole game. And then with VAR playing games as well, I just went, you know, I really should choose another sport, but I can't. I'm stuck with this, and I'll just have to deal with it. But it was a struggle, that one. But, yeah, the Spurs game obviously revived everything. And who was going to talk about as well? What about burnout and the other one who sounds like Xhaka but isn't, Saka? Do you think he's a little bit burnt out now? What's going on with him?
Yeah, I'm a bit concerned for him. I think he's that famous red zone. I think there's a risk of him and Smith Rowe. And you can see that in sort of Arteta's selection on Thursday. Yeah, there's a few rotations, wasn't there? And it's something that we're going to have to be aware of while we're still in the Europa Cup. It's something we're going to have to be aware of, you know. So it's an opportunity for certain players to get some game time. I think it's something that Arteta's aware of and he's trying to sort of remedy.
Oh yeah, just going briefly back to the party because I found the story. You were right, Lacazette was there, Alba was there, Kolasinac was there, Guendouzi, so he's gone, as well as Kolasinac. Mkhitaryan was there and Mustafi was there. But those two, Mkhitaryan and Mustafi, they weren't seen using balloons, so they were just there. So that doesn't mean they didn't do it and doesn't mean they did. But yeah, Kolasinac, because I started worrying. I was looking it up going, I'm not 100% sure about him. And Ozil, of course, was there. So yeah, it just seems to me like that group of players, there aren't that many remaining, are there? There's only Laka and Alba. That's it. And the rest, they're all history. And so that was my point. I just suddenly had a thought the other day because, you know, I'm thinking about Arsenal games probably far too much than I should. I wonder if he was breaking up a little clique there. And does that mean that Auba and Laka are, a lot of people saying Laka will go. I don't want him to, as you know. What do you reckon? Do you think Laka and Auba will stay after this summer?
I think one of them might go.
Yeah.
I think one of them might. I think just because, just to fund...
a new midfielder or something.
Transfers. Just to fund transfers, yeah. I think one of them will. I think one of them has to.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see how... honestly, I don't... You know, I think we need new strikers. I think we need midfielders. I think, especially after the seasons that Uber has had, I don't think he's the golden child anymore, certainly.
Mm, yeah, definitely. Seems that way.
I wouldn't be surprised if he goes.
And defence, right back, what do you think the situation there? Because Bellerin
Suarez has done a good job, you can't deny that. I think, to be honest, I think he's better. I wouldn't be surprised if Bellerin goes.
Yeah, me too. I don't want it.
I wouldn't be surprised if Bellerin goes. I wouldn't be too bothered if Bellerin did go with you, mate.
Yeah.
He just hasn't performed to the level that we need him to recently.
Yeah.
I don't think he's been it. And I think it's telling that Suarez has been better than him.
He has been good, Cedric. I'm happy with him. Even when he plays out of position on the left, he's not bad. He does a lot of good work. Yeah. And he's tenacious and he's quick. He's not as quick as Bellerin, that's all. But aside from that, he offers as much to the team as Bellerin. And I'm a huge fan of Bellerin, I think, as many people know. I've been banging a drum for him for year after year. I'm still not sick of him. I don't want him to go, but yeah, this Cedric, I like what I see, really. I liked him from day one as well, even though a lot of Arsenal fans said, no, he's rubbish. We just got rubbish from Southampton. They wanted to get rid. And I just didn't really buy into that. I just thought the guy's a solid player. And he not only solid, he knows where the net is as well. He has a strike at goal every now and then, and he's got a good shot on him.
I think his crosses is better than Bellerin as well.
Yeah, I think so too. So generally, he puts a decent cross in the box. So there's him, and obviously we mentioned Tierney. And so you. What about you're a bit happier with the ex-Chelsea guy, David Luiz? A bit happier? Not really. I'm quite happy with him. I've always been happy with him, but apart from when he made that terrible error.
He's got a mistake in him. Every game he's got a mistake in him.
But he's just so experienced. I just like having him in the team compared to... Well, I say that. I like when I start comparing him to the other options, then maybe I'm not as happy as I'm saying I am, because when I think about it, there's Holding, who's not playing much lately, who I'd like to see play more often. There's... who else? I'm running out of ideas. Chambers came back the other day, didn't he? And it's disappeared again.
Yeah. I was happy with Chambers.
Yeah,
Chambers is one that I'm happy with.
Me too. So, David Luiz, I don't know. The way he's playing lately, I think he's playing well enough to get a new deal. I know you'll disagree with me there.
No, I don't think he should be allowed another new deal, definitely not.
Yeah.
I just think we should aim our sights better.
Yeah. He's just got so much experience. Yeah. And I think if you've got Gabriel alongside Holding, even though, I don't know, I just feel like David Luiz, he's got a range of passing, there's that, and he has that experience. And yeah, he does make some pretty heinous errors sometimes and puts the team in a lot of trouble. Touchwood hasn't been one for a while, but I shouldn't really say that, should I? So, he got drafted back in the team pretty sharply after missing. What did he miss games for? I can't remember, but he was out, wasn't he, for a bit. He's come back in, looked pretty good up to now, and I quite like his partnership with Gabriel. I think Gabriel looks better alongside him than he does alongside Holding, and I really like Holding as well. I know you're not a massive fan, are you, of Holding?
No, I don't mind him. I think I'd rather keep him than Luis.
Yeah,
I just think we can do better than Luis.
Yeah.
I just think
we can do better than Luis.
Luis.
Just, yeah, of course,
like,
if there was.
He hasn't proven anything to the. Like, he's just calamitous. He's got 3 red cards. He makes mistakes all the time. But I just don't think he's the sort of.
Yeah.
The quality that we need. Like, I think he's all right, but.
Yeah.
He's not the quality I want in a centre half.
Yeah. And talking of ex Chelsea players, what about Willian, our favourite?
Yeah, well.
He's better now.
It's a credit. Credit where credit's due. Willian has pulled it out of the bag, hasn't he?
Started to deliver, yeah. I mean, about the time, I'd just given up hope on him at that time. I'd actually given up.
Yeah.
I thought, it's not going to happen.
You and me both.
Yeah, I went, Alex is right. I was totally wrong about this guy. He was good, but he's not anymore. So I have to just give up. And every time I'd see him, I'd inwardly boo. You know, I wouldn't outwardly boo a player, but they can't hear me anyway. But, you know, inwardly, I'd be going, no, please don't do this. And then I'd see him come on. And then he started actually playing quite well. But
yeah, he's come to a bit of form.
Yeah.
I don't know what Arteta's done, but, you know, keep doing it.
Yeah, something, somewhere is going right. And what about Odegaard?
You know,
would you keep him?
Yeah.
Same man.
Definitely.
For how much?
Yeah. Well, Arsenal aren't great with transfers, are we?
Let's not be clear. Really, no.
You'd be tempted to say, I don't know, if you could get him for as little as, say, 40, 45 million, I'd be reasonably happy with that.
Yeah, I would too. Yeah, that's the trouble. I can't put a price on him, but I definitely want him to stay at Arsenal. I think the guy's been... He's not been perfect in every game, but he's not... A lot of games, he's not far off. Not every game.
He's obviously adapting to the league. You know, it takes time, doesn't it? He's adapting to a new team, but he's happy. And I think Arteta has been gushing over him in the media recently. Arteta's very happy with him.
Yeah, I've been so impressed with the guy's attitude. He runs around like a lunatic, really. Closes everybody down.
Yeah.
He defends really well, actually. For a playmaker.
He's part of the team effort, isn't he?
Yeah.
Definitely.
I think against Spurs, or it was one recent match anyway, there was a game. Oh, somebody's just joined us. Venky, thank you for joining us. There was one game when he was, I think it was Spurs, and he won at least 3 tackles. And it was all getting very, very spicy out there. And he's not frightened at all. He just goes in.
No, he's not reckless.
No. That's what I like about him too. And I thought, this guy, no one's got a moment's peace with him. No one's got a moment's peace. He'll close everybody down. And he you can see he gives everything. He's got, you can see like he's puffing sometimes because he's struggling because he's running up front. He's running at the back and he just sprints everywhere he goes. This guy, it's just, his passing's still good. So it's, and the thing is, and the one concern was, and I think Tony Adams said, well, he said he was totally against bringing this guy in. He said it's going to hamper the progress of Smith Rowe, but clearly that's not the case because when they play together, it's a pretty, I mean, they're not exactly a partnership, are they? But they work well together. They offer
they
different.
Dovetail quite well.
Yeah, I think so. Even though sometimes they're in different parts of the pitch, it's just they offer a different sort of threat because, like, Smith Rowe's dynamite when he's running up the defences with the ball at his feet, whereas the other guy is just likely, Odegaard's likely to just put a pinpoint pass through. Not saying Smith Rowe can't do it because he can, but he's more, I don't know, I find he's more moving with the ball, whereas Odegaard makes the ball do the work a little bit more.
Yeah.
That's the main difference.
Smith Rowe's more of a runner with the ball, isn't he?
Yeah.
Smith Rowe runs at players. I don't think Odegaard has the pace, but I think he's like a new Ozil.
Yeah.
But Ozil backs back.
Yeah, so they're such a great combination having the pair, you know, because then you've got both ways of attacking an opponent. Whereas, with Ozil, it was always lackadaisical. I can't be bothered to track back because I'm a number 10 and so on and so on. So things are looking up. Let's hope they're looking up after this West Ham game. So I suppose before we head off into the sunset, even though it's already set, we should probably talk about the upcoming game against West Ham, how confident do you feel?
Well, they're looking a good team at the minute, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think
good results.
Know, Moyes has got them into a good team. They're top four for a reason.
Yeah.
It's not going to be easy. And, you know, we're away from home. Are we away from home?
I believe so, yeah. I'm pretty sure, yeah. So, I didn't check yet. But yeah, so it's so you don't sound very confident.
And I think, you know, we might be a bit tired after the European
game. Course,
that's one thing about West Ham. You know, they're one of those teams that has done very well. You know, you can't sort of deny that. But you go, well, you know, the fact that you only play one game a week, that helps.
Yeah, you know? There is that.
You know, the European thing. You know, West Ham obviously don't have the squad to play more than, you know, a game a week. And that, you know, that's no sort of slight to West Ham. It's just an observation on the reality of the situation, really. So, yeah, it's not that I'm scared of West Ham. I think it's just, you know, we don't play well after Europe normally. I know we played well against Spurs, you know, fair enough. But, well, we'll see how we go. You know, I think it might end up being a draw.
Could quite well end up in a draw. Looking at the previous results, they lost to both Manchesters, and they've beaten Leeds, beaten Spurs, beaten Sheffield United. So they've had three wins.
No big team there.
Yeah, three wins, two defeats. And then before that, yeah, they got knocked out of the cup by one of the Manchesters. Can't see from this website. Yeah. And drew with Fulham, though. Beat Villa away. Yeah. That was something else, but then they lost to Liverpool on their home ground. But before that, they had a massive amount of wins on the trot.
Yeah.
Crazy amount of wins. So yeah, looking at, if you took it from this calendar year, it's been mostly wins with a few defeats and one draw, I think. So they're not really a team that's drawn much. So like you said, maybe this would be a draw. They've had one draw in this calendar year from the stats I'm looking at. But, and how many defeats? Well, three defeats to Mancunian teams and only one other defeat, which was to Liverpool. So they just don't like playing teams from the Northwest. Must be that. Yeah. So
we had a stage like that, didn't we?
yeah. Different teams, though. All right, so have we got anything else that we need to discuss, do you reckon, or are we almost there with that?
No, do you know when the next Europa League games are?
Oh, God, yeah. One thing before you go, one thing about the Europa League. What about the draw? I'll look at the next.
On first glance, I was quite happy.
Yeah.
I think the good thing is we play the first leg away.
Yeah.
That's obviously an advantage. This Slavia Prague, though, no, they knocked out Rangers, who, you know, it's a Scottish team, but they did just win the league. So, obviously, you know, for our Celtic friend, that's a nice friendly reminder.
He'll like that.
But as well, they knocked out Leicester as well. So they're not mugs.
No, Leicester.
So I think it won't be easy. I think we've got enough quality to get through. I think Arteta knows that this is our chance of a trophy. Arteta knows that this is a backdoor entry into the Champions League. So, you know, but I'm quietly confident. I think we've got the players to do it.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't that displeased about the draw either myself. And then, of course, if we can get past them in the next round, we could be seeing Emery back at the Emirates.
I know. How crazy is that, eh?
And did you see the other option is... the team that beat Spurs, who was it that beat Spurs? I forgot who it is. Some Eastern European team. Who was it that beat Spurs? Smashed them. Yeah, that's it. I think it's them. So yeah, it's going to be, I don't know. I looked at draw for it. Yeah, it could be slightly better, but it's not bad. It's not a bad draw. I just wanted to avoid Man U, really. Was that a team you wanted to avoid?
Yeah, to be honest, yeah. Well, yeah, Roma as well. I think United have got a tougher half of the draw. I think Granada's obviously quite easy for them.
Yeah, I think so.
But I think they've got a tougher half of the draw, definitely.
Yeah, well, let's hope so. Anyway, yeah, I was just going to tell you the dates when I have these upcoming games. So the 9th, April the 9th, Slavia Prague at Arsenal first, and then...
Oh, right, so it's a few weeks away then.
Yeah, it's not on top of us, and then...
There's internationals coming up soon, isn't there?
Yeah, I think after this West Ham game, so that's when the break kicks in. Is after the West Ham game, because the next game after that is the 4th of April against Liverpool, and then it's Slavia Prague at the Emirates, so both those games at the Emirates. Then it's Sheffield United away on the 12th. I'm not looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And then Slavia Prague away on the 16th of April, so April's going to be a pretty tough month. Let's see what comes after that. For one person listening, going to go, what's this? I've just tuned into a fixture list. Yeah, well, you asked. So then we got Fulham. So a local derby on the 17th of April, followed by a week later, home game against Everton. So both of those at home. Then Newcastle away. They could be down by then if they don't start picking up their pulling their socks up, Newcastle. They're very stripy socks. Well, actually, they're not stripy, are they? I'm making it up. And then 8th of May, West Brom at home, Sam Allardyce, your mate. You don't like him, do you?
That's that.
Yeah. And then I only said that to give you the opportunity to say that. And then a few days after that, you're set in your ways. So if I mention West Brom, it's like automatic. It's like a button press. And then after that, Chelsea away. Oh, I don't like the look of this. The end of the season is horrible to me. Because they're all sort of local games and they can go either way, right? Chelsea away, 13th of May. 2 days later, Palace away, which used to be a walk in the park, but isn't anymore. And then finally, at final game of the season, Brighton at home. And that's another one which brings back bad memories. So don't like the look at the end of the season much. But yeah, I don't know. I said all along, I felt Arsenal were a cup team. But that wasn't proven, was it, in the FA Cup? But what worries me about the Europa League is Arsenal are a cup team, but I still feel that, but they can only do it in one leg. So unless they take a massive lead in the first leg, I'm always afraid they're going to throw the ball in the net for the second leg. So yeah. I'm still quite nervous about
it. Well, we did a little bit, didn't we, against
Olympiacos.
The last one, so...
So hopefully no more of that, but they like to keep us on the edge of our seats, don't they? That's what it is. I think they call it entertainment somewhere, but I call it stress, but that's me. Right, okay, then what happened to my speakers? Oh, they're cutting in. It's a bit like Arsenal in the first 5 minutes of a game. They take a while to get warmed up. So anyway, thanks again, Alex, for joining us, and there's about three of us, two of us doing it and one listening out there. So, you know, when I play it on repeat, no doubt there'll be so many more of you actually listening to this. I think there will be, actually. So thanks again, Alex. And until the next time, adios, amigos. Yeah,